Chapter 11. Out of the Bottle. A little bit of magic goes a long way. Warning: this chapter contains spoilers for the following book. 20s Girl by Sophie Kinsella. Wishing. Whether it be on a shooting star, on a birthday cake glowing with candles, on a wishbone, or maybe even as we fall asleep. We've all wished for something at some point in our lives, and we've all wondered, what if it actually came true? That's why this genre, dubbed Out of the Bottle, in honor of Aladdin and his magic wish-granting lamp, resonates so strongly with readers. It's a story that gets told over and over again. A hero wishes for something that will make all of their problems go away, and poof, it comes true. But this magical genre isn't just about granting wishes. It's also about bestowing curses, sending guardian angels, swapping bodies, and even transporting your hero into strange dimensions and parallel universes. Regardless of the type of nature-bending you choose to do, all of the stories in the out-of-the-bottle genre boil down to the same thing. A guy or gal is bestowed with some sort of magic, realizes that reality isn't all that bad, and comes out in the end a changed person. Presto! The magic in out-of-the-bottle tales is used as a vehicle, a convenient, clever, and thought-provoking way to illustrate a universal truth that we all could stand to learn. We are pretty dang great as we are. No magic required. Because once the magic is bestowed upon our hero, they eventually have to learn that they didn't need it after all. Which is why you don't see a lot of otherworld fantasy or sci-fi novels in this genre. This genre isn't about exploring a new fantastical world, like in the Harry Potter series, the Lord of the Rings series, the Chronicles of Narnia, or a Song of Ice and Fire series, a Game of Thrones. Most of the heroes in the out-of-the-bottle genre come from our world and are temporarily gifted or cursed with magic. They're like us, and that's what makes them so much fun to read about. Although this touched-by-magic genre is typically seen more in movies than in books, famous examples being The Nutty Professor, Big, 13 Going on 30, Freaky Friday, Bruce Almighty, The Mask, Liar Liar, Shallow Hal, and Groundhog Day. It's been done successfully in novels as well. And interestingly enough, the genre tends to be more popular in books for younger readers, like The Indian in the Cupboard by Lynn Reed Banks, The Swap by Megan Shull, 11 Birthdays by Wendy Mass, Before I Fall by Lauren Oliver, and If I Stay by Gail Forman. Namely because magic and granted wishes tends to appeal particularly to kids and teens. But that doesn't mean adults can't join in the fun as well. Because who doesn't enjoy a little twist of magic, a little bending of the rules, or an answer to the universal question, what if? Some favorites of this genre, of the non-kid variety, include 20s Girl by Sophie Kinsella, Landline by Rainbow Rowell, and of course one of the most beloved classics of all time, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. Even Oscar Wilde dabbled in some out-of-the-bottleness of his own when he penned his famed classic novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. Regardless of the intended audience, out-of-the-bottle stories all share three commonalities. One, a hero deserving of the magic. Two, a spell or touch of magic. And three, a lesson. Let's take a closer look at these. Whether your hero is an underdog in desperate need of some magical intervention, like in 20s Girl, or an unlikable grouch or arrogant jerk who needs to be taught a lesson with a nice little curse, like in A Christmas Carol, the hero must deserve this magic. And our out-of-the-bottle hero must be properly matched with their bottle. We readers need to immediately grasp and understand why this hero is getting this magic. And not only do we need to understand, we need to root for it. After the amazing job that Charles Dickens does setting up the awful miser Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol, there's no way we're not totally on board when those three Christmas ghosts turn up and show that old grouch what's what. Conversely, when the poor, down-on-her-luck, recently dumped Laura Lingdon in 20s Girl gets visited by the ghost of her 105-year-old Aunt Sadie, who helps Laura sort out her life, we get it. We're there, cheering her on. We want this for Laura just as much as she does. So that's your first question when penning an out of the bottle. Why does this hero deserve this magic in their life? Are they a tread-upon Cinderella type who just can't catch a break, also called an empowerment story? Or do they more resemble one of the wicked stepsisters who desperately needs a reality check, also called a comeuppance story? Either way, make sure the reader gets it. Set up your hero so that when the magic strikes, usually at the catalyst beat, we are saying, oh yeah, they totally deserve this. A word of caution, however. Comeuppance stories can be harder to pull off than empowerment stories. When you have an unlikable hero, it's much easier for a reader to get prematurely turned off by the character and put the book down before the fun stuff even begins. Even though this meanie is eventually going to get what's coming to them, you don't want to lose your reader before you have a chance to give your character their much-needed kick in the booty. This is where a save-the-cat moment can really save your novel. See what I did there? Give your hero something that is redeemable up front, ideally before the catalyst beat, and preferably within the first 10 to 20 pages. Even the biggest nitwits on the planet have something about them that's worth saving. Show us why we should invest our precious time watching this hero transform. Prove to us early on that even though they don't look like much now, just you wait. They've got hidden depth. They're worth the pages. Next up in our out-of-the-bottle checklist, you'll need a little bit of magic, of course. This is called the spell, or the touch of magic. What exactly is the magic of this magical tale? Is it a flapper-dressed Charleston dancing ghost, 20s girl? Is it an out-of-body experience, if I stay? Is it a magic landline phone that can call the past, landline? Or maybe it's a day that keeps repeating itself over and over, 11 birthdays, and before I fall. Whatever it is, make sure it's front and center in Act 2 of your novel. After all, it's the whole premise of the story. This magical thing is probably going to be promised to readers on the back of the book or in the online description, so make sure you deliver on that promise. Whether your hero wishes for the magic themselves or the magic is thrust upon them, make sure the spell itself is unique. Make it interesting and fun and exciting. This will be your novel's hook. It's important to note that you don't have to spend a lot of time on how the magic works. The why is important. Why is this hero being bestowed with this magic? The how, that is, the mechanics, less so. These stories are not really about the magic itself, but more what the hero gets out of that magic. So don't waste pages explaining the ins and outs of the spell or taking us down long-winded rabbit holes of explanation. In 20s Girl, the magic is simply introduced and dealt with quickly. I don't know how it works, says Laura's great Aunt Sadie. I just think about where I want to be, and I'm there. Page 73. And in The Indian in the Cupboard, we simply know that the cupboard is magic, and it brings Little Bear, Omri's toy Indian figure, to life. Lynn Reed Banks doesn't go into much more detail than that. More important than the how are the rules of the magic. Yes, even though it's magic, and even though it goes against the laws of nature, you still have to have rules. And you have to stick to them, no matter how tempting it might be to play around and change things up at will to suit your plot. Remember that readers are going to have to willingly suspend disbelief in order to be pulled into your fantastical tale. They're going to have to say, well, that's impossible, but what the hey, sounds like a good read. But you only get one chance to do that. And if you cheat your readers by establishing the rules of the magic up front and then changing them further down the road, your readers will feel betrayed and you will lose them. Readers of the out-of-the-bottle genre dive into the novel knowing it's not going to follow the basic laws of nature, but they trust you to do it well. So don't betray that trust. And finally, the third thing you'll need when crafting your out-of-this-world, out-of-the-bottle is a lesson. How is the hero transformed by this magic? In the end, all heroes of this genre must realize something very important. That it's not the magic that will fix their lives for good. It's the heroes themselves who need to do that. The magic just showed them what needed to be fixed. That is the essence of the out-of-the-bottle genre. Although it's always nice to get a little shortcut in life, use magic to sweep all your problems under the rug, in the end, we all know it's cheating. And if the magic were the ultimate solution to the problems, what would we readers have to resonate with? We know that magic is never going to happen to us, which is why most out-of-the-bottle stories include some kind of moral or lesson about reality and humanity. Basically, that they're both pretty awesome. Being human has its advantages too, and it turns out magic doesn't solve the real-life problems. It's just a fun distraction for a while. That's also why most out-of-the-bottle heroes eventually have an Act 3 beat, in which they have to do it without the magic. This is usually some big finale moment when the hero proves, once and for all, that they didn't need that silly old magic to complete their transformation. They've got that part covered all on their own. Because in the end, the true magic lies inside of us. To recap, if you're thinking of writing an out-of-the-bottle novel, make sure your story includes these three essential ingredients. A hero deserving of the magic. Whether you're empowering an underdog or delivering a comeuppance to a worthy recipient, make sure it's clear to the reader that this hero needs this specific supernatural boost. A spell or touch of magic. Regardless of how the magic comes to be, via a person, place, thing, or other, make sure you're setting up this illogical thing with logical rules that you stick to, lest you risk betraying your reader's trust. A lesson. What does your hero learn from this magic, and how do they ultimately fix things the right way, without the magic? Popular out-of-the-bottle novels through time include A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, Freaky Friday by Mary Rodgers, If I Stay by Gail Forman. For a complete list, please reference the bonus PDF that came with this audiobook. Here is the beat sheet for 20s Girl by Sophie Kinsella. Save the Cat genre, out of the bottle. Book genre, general fiction. Total pages, 435. Dial Press Trade Paperback, 2009. Made famous by her hilarious best-selling Shopaholic series, Sophie Kinsella is a modern queen of comedy in the book world. Her books have been translated into over 30 languages. 20s Girl, about a 20-something girl hilariously haunted by the 20s girl ghost of her great-aunt Sadie, is thus far Kinsella's first novel to include a supernatural twist. The ghostly curse that hero Lara experiences and the unexpected life lessons acquired from said curse place this tale in the out-of-the-bottle genre. 1. Opening image, pages 1 through 10. 20-something Lara Lingdon and her parents are preparing to go to a funeral for a 105-year-old great-aunt whom no one in the family really knew. But Lara is far more preoccupied by the list of lies she's recently told her parents. like how her new startup business is going extremely well, and how her new business partner is super reliable and trustworthy. In reality, the opposite is true. This list tells us a lot about Lara and the things that need fixing in her life. She also lies to her parents about being completely over her ex-boyfriend Josh, who has just dumped her, when actually, she's secretly praying they'll get back together. Once. Lara's fibs tell us a lot about our hero and her flaws. She's the kind of girl who can't move on from her mistakes, but instead tries to hide them from her family. 2. Theme stated, page 8. When Lara is talking and lying to her parents about her ex-boyfriend, her dad kindly tells her, "When you break up with someone, it's easy to look backward and think life would be perfect if you got back together." Page 8. Lara's transformative journey is all about moving on, rejecting the delusions she has about what her life should look like, and starting to enjoy what life does look like. To do that, she'll need more self-confidence. She'll need to become bolder and more courageous. 3. Setup, pages 10 through 25. The family attends the funeral of Sadie Lancaster, Lara's 105-year-old great-aunt. Outside the funeral parlor, Lara bumps into her uncle Bill, who is well known for founding Lingdon's Coffee, a massively successful company that he famously created from 20 pence he found in his pocket when he was broke. Now he does seminars called Two Little Coins, teaching other entrepreneurs how to emulate his success. Lara tries to ask him for help with her new headhunting company that's been failing miserably since her business partner Natalie left. But Bill shuts her down. Then, after embarrassingly going into the wrong funeral, Lara finds her way into the right room, only to find there's hardly anyone there, and no one even brought any photographs of Sadie. It seems no one knew Sadie Lancaster at all. 4. Catalyst, pages 25 to 28. During the funeral, Lara hears an unfamiliar voice asking where her necklace is. Then she sees a girl around the same age as Lara, sitting in the chair in front of her. Who is that? When the girl tries to poke Lara, her finger goes through her. Freaky. The girl introduces herself as Sadie Lancaster, Lara's dead great aunt. 5. Debate, pages 29 through 72. Like most out-of-the-bottle stories, the debate is a reality check. Am I dreaming? Is this real? Lara is convinced she's hallucinating a 20-something version of her great aunt. But as hard as she tries to rid herself of the vision, Sadie just won't go away. In fact, she's really annoying. She keeps screaming for Lara to stop the funeral. She can't be buried until she finds a missing necklace. Lara finally complies, quickly making up an excuse to postpone the funeral. She has reason to believe Sadie was murdered, and the police still need to investigate. Everyone thinks Lara has gone crazy, including Lara. The next day, Lara convinces herself that Sadie is a figment of her subconscious. But then at lunch, Sadie teaches Lara how to properly eat an oyster, and Lara realizes her subconscious doesn't know how to eat an oyster. Sadie might actually be a real ghost. 6. Break into 2, pages 73 to 74. Sadie continues to hound Lara about her missing necklace, claiming she can't rest until she's found it, and she needs Lara to help her look for it. Lara makes her a deal. "If I find your necklace for you, will you go away and leave me in peace?" Page 73. Sadie agrees, and now we are officially in Act 2, the world of Lara and her magical 20s girl ghost. 7. Fun and Games, pages 75 to 211. The search for the necklace brings Lara to Sadie's former nursing home, where the employees believe the necklace was accidentally sold in a fundraising raffle. Lara goes home with a daunting list of names and phone numbers of people to contact who might have it. While at the nursing home, Laura discovers that a mysterious man named Charles Reese came to visit Sadie before she died. Sadie doesn't remember Charles Reese, but Laura chalks it up to the stroke Sadie had years before her death, which severely affected her memory. They later learn that Charles Reese was actually Bill Lingdon, Laura's famous uncle, and that he took the necklace from Sadie. But what does rich Uncle Bill want with an old woman's worthless necklace? The promise of the premise of this novel is the hilarious interludes of Sadie and Laura. Sadie is everything Laura is not, spunky, bold, and daring. In comparison to Sadie, Laura is a bit dull, and Sadie never misses an opportunity to tell her so. As most out-of-the-bottle magic is intended to do, Sadie will help Laura realize her flaws so she can fix them herself. As the two search for Sadie's necklace, they continue to ruffle each other's feathers, but ultimately form a friendship. Hilarity ensues as Sadie and Laura culture clash. They're both 20-something girls, but from very different eras, with very different ideas about men, relationships, and living life. Sadie points out that Laura shouldn't be lamenting her ex Josh. She should be getting back out there and getting on with her life. In many ways, Sadie is way more modern than Laura. On page 94, Sadie restates the theme when she says to Laura, "Darling, when things go wrong in life, this is what you do. You lift your chin, put on a ravishing smile, mix yourself a little cocktail, and out you go." During this fun and games, we also come to understand the rules of the magic, which Kinsella sets up effectively and uses to further the plot. For instance, we learn that no one else can see Sadie except Laura. Sadie can go wherever she wants and wear whatever she wants. And the most unique and creative rule in Kinsella's supernatural tale is Ghost Sadie's ability to subtly persuade people to do and say things by screaming comically loudly in their ear. Learning these rules gives Laura an idea. She sends Sadie to spy on her ex-boyfriend Josh to try to figure out why he dumped her so she can fix the relationship. Sadie doesn't approve, but she reluctantly agrees. This is Laura fixing things the wrong way. She's using her magic curse to improve her life, instead of learning the theme, moving on, and fixing things the right way. Laura's wants are to get back together with Josh, so this drives the first half of Act 2 forward. Laura then convinces Sadie to use her powers of persuasion to give Josh a little nudge. She knows Josh still loves her, but she wants Sadie to prompt him a bit so he remembers. As we continue the upward path toward the midpoint, Josh confesses that he loves Laura and made a huge mistake by breaking up with her. Laura is ecstatic. It's exactly what she wanted. As she gets to know Sadie better, Laura learns that Sadie once had a special boy in her life too, the one who got away. He was a painter named Stephen Nettleton, who died young, but not before painting a beautiful portrait of Sadie that was later lost in a house fire. Sadie hasn't really been in love since. Laura also uses Sadie's help with her failing business, sending Sadie into an office building to solve a problem with a client. While inside the office building, however, Sadie spots a beautiful man named Ed, whom she wants to date. Unfortunately, Ghost Sadie can't go on dates, but Laura can. 8. B Story, pages 111 to 120. Ed is the B Story character and the love interest of the novel. Sadie convinces Laura to ask Ed out on a date so she can third wheel and live vicariously through Laura. Laura thinks she's crazy, but Sadie guilt trips her into agreeing. In a hilarious scene in Ed's office conference room, Laura asks Ed on a date in front of his entire staff. And with Sadie yelling in Ed's ear, Ed feels obliged to say yes, even though he has no idea why. Later for their date, Sadie makes Laura dress up like a 1920s flapper and act just like Sadie would, completely embarrassing Laura. She convinces herself she doesn't care, though, since she's only doing this for Sadie, and she's still in love with Josh. But slowly, Laura will come to fall for Ed, and Ed will fall for her too, helping her get over Josh and move on with her life. Theme: just as Sadie said she should. Ed represents the theme in that he, too, has had trouble getting over an ex. It's held him back significantly. In recognizing this flaw in Ed, Lara will eventually recognize this same flaw in herself. 9. Midpoint, pages 231 to 264. Lara attends a huge business dinner with Ed, with lots of important guests. Midpoint party. She uses Sadie to successfully network and help her floundering business. And by the end of the night, she has a promising new lead. Lara now seems all around victorious. She and Josh are back together, once, and her business is on the verge of thriving. Of course, it's a false victory, because Lara had to use magic to achieve all of it, particularly getting back together with Josh, whom she's clearly not meant to be with. After the party, A and B stories cross, and emotional stakes are raised as she has a heart-to-heart conversation with Ed and learns about his painful breakup. Sadie persuades Ed to take Lara dancing. Even though Sadie is still pushing them together, it's Lara who, entirely on her own, asks Ed out again, this time to go sightseeing. It seems Lara is already starting to fall for Ed, even if she hasn't quite realized it yet. 10. Bad guys close in, pages 212 to 319. Things start heading downhill for Lara after the party. Josh starts acting strangely toward her. Is he changing his mind? She comes close to getting Sadie's necklace back, but loses it at the last minute. Lara's former business partner, Natalie, who had left Lara in the lurch, comes waltzing back into the office and starts taking credit for all the progress Lara has made with the business. And tensions are high between Sadie and Lara. Sadie is still highly disapproving of Lara's getting back together with Josh. Lara and Sadie fight, and Sadie declares that Josh got back together with Lara only because Sadie convinced him to do it. Lara realizes Sadie is right after an awkward dinner with Josh, where he can't come up with one good reason why they're back together. Lara breaks it off with Josh, proving that she's getting closer to learning the theme. Meanwhile, Lara and Ed continue to bond during a fun sightseeing trip. Ed confesses that he likes her, but Lara can't bring herself to believe it. She guiltily thinks that Ed is still under Sadie's spell, just like Josh was. But during a romantic moment on the London Eye, Ed kisses Lara, and she finally realizes she has feelings for him. Unfortunately, Sadie sees them kissing and becomes furious. Ed was supposed to be hers. Lara tries to apologize to Sadie, but only ends up looking crazy in front of Ed, who has no idea who she's talking to. Sadie falls into a depression when she realizes she'll never fall in love again, and no man will ever want her again because she's dead. She also laments that her life meant nothing. She left no mark. No one came to her funeral. 11. All is lost, pages 319 to 329. The next morning, Natalie reveals that she spoke to Ed and told him that Lara was headhunting him and not really interested in him. When Lara tries to call Ed to set the record straight, he's extremely cold and rebukes Lara for playing him to get ahead in the business world. Lara yells at Natalie for what she did and leaves the company. Now Lara has lost Sadie, Ed, and her business, all in less than 24 hours. 12. Dark Night of the Soul, pages 330 to 359. Lara looks everywhere for Sadie, hoping to make amends with her. But the longer she searches, the more she falls into despair. In a mirror of the debate, Lara again wonders whether Sadie really was real or Lara had made her up. Lara's search leads her to Sadie's hometown, where she visits an old vicarage and discovers something astonishing. A print of a painting depicting an anonymous young girl in her 20s, painted by a very famous painter, whom she soon discovers was Sadie's lost lover. This is a print of the painting Sadie thought was lost in the fire. In the portrait, Sadie is her 20-something self and is wearing the dragonfly necklace they've been searching for. The woman guiding the tour of the vicarage explains that this is a copy of the famous painting called Girl with the Necklace. The original is hanging in the London Portrait Gallery, and no one knows who the subject was. But Lara does. Dark Night Epiphany. All of this time, Sadie felt like she'd left no mark on the world and died completely unnoticed and unloved. But the truth is quite the opposite. Sadie is famous, and her portrait is admired by millions. 13. Break into Three, pages 360 to 361. After all Sadie's done for Lara, now it's time for Lara to help Sadie. But with Sadie still missing, she'll have to do it without the magic. To get Sadie acknowledged as the subject of the painting, Lara goes to the London Portrait Gallery to talk to the collections manager, Malcolm. 14. Finale, pages 362 to 425. Point 1. Gathering the team. As a team of one, Lara gathers information. Malcolm tells her they purchased the painting in the 1980s from a contractually anonymous seller. He won't tell Lara who sold them the painting. Point 2. Executing the plan. Lara has to let Sadie know that her painting wasn't lost in the fire and that she died a famous woman. Lara finally finds Sadie at a jazz festival, and they have an emotional reunion. But before Lara can tell Sadie about the painting, Sadie points out Ed, whom she persuaded to come there, and tells Lara to go talk to him, Sadie's way of apologizing for what happened at the London Eye. As Ed and Lara reconcile, Sadie tries to convince Ed to do something by screaming in his ear. This time, he rejects Sadie's influence, proving that he really loves Lara on his own, without the magic. Lara explains about the painting to both Sadie and Ed. She takes them both to the London Portrait Gallery to see it. Point 3. High Tower Surprise. While at the gallery, Lara and Ed bump into Malcolm, and Lara tricks him into pulling out the sales contract for the painting so Ghost Sadie can surreptitiously read it. Sadie reveals that the seller was Bill Lingdon, Uncle Bill. He never told Sadie, his aunt, the painting was salvaged from the fire, and he'd sold it to the National Portrait Gallery for £500,000. Point 4. Dig Deep Down. Lara puts all the pieces together. Bill Lingdon didn't start Lingdon's Coffee with 20 pence. He started it with £500,000 that he stole from his own aunt. The Two Little Coins seminar that has made him famous is a sham. And he wanted the necklace so badly because after Sadie lost her memory, it was the only thing linking Sadie to the portrait and revealing him as the fraud he is. Lara vows to avenge Sadie and give Bill his comeuppance. Point 5. The execution of the new plan. Because of her ghostly abilities to go wherever she wants, Sadie learns that Uncle Bill is on holiday in the south of France. Sadie and Lara set off. Lara finally has to prove her newfound confidence and self-assurance when she confronts Bill about the necklace, forcing him to come clean to the public about how he really started the coffee company and giving Sadie and her painting credit for his success. Now everyone knows that the subject of Girl with the Necklace is Sadie Lancaster. She's left her mark on the world, just as she wanted. Lara starts a new headhunting business, all on her own. And later, a large envelope arrives from Paris, the last known whereabouts of Sadie's necklace. Inside is the dragonfly necklace. After a tearful goodbye with Ghost Sadie, Lara goes to the funeral parlor and puts the necklace around real Sadie's neck. When she reemerges from the funeral home, Ghost Sadie is gone. Both 20s girls have moved on. 15. Final Image, pages 426 to 435. A second and much improved funeral for Sadie is held. This one is elegant and packed with people, all admirers of Sadie and the painting, and all wearing 1920s outfits. Lara makes a touching speech about Sadie and the person she was in life. Unlike at the first funeral, Sadie is now known and understood. Why is this an out of the bottle? 20s Girl contains all three elements of a successful out of the bottle story. A hero deserving of the magic. At the outset, Lara's life is a mess. She's hung up on an ex-boyfriend who wants nothing to do with her. Her business is failing, and she completely lacks confidence. She's in desperate need of some magical intervention, and Ghost Sadie is just what the doctor ordered. A spell or touch of magic. The ghost of Sadie Lancaster is unique and entertaining. Sophie Kinsella takes a typical haunting story and turns it hilariously on its head, creating a whole new set of rules that give Lara the magical boost she so desperately needs. A lesson. Sadie is everything Lara is not: free-spirited, bold, and adventurous. She teaches Lara an important lesson about life, love, and the power of a good flapperdress. Through Sadie, Lara learns to be confident in her own skin and move on from the things that are holding her back in life. If you'd like to read an abbreviated version of this beat sheet, check out the Cat's Eye View for 20s Girl, which can be found in the bonus PDF.